What are you eating?
Well, I'm eating an Easter egg.
Well, two things. Well, it's not Easter yet. And we should be doing a podcast. You shouldn't be loading food into your face.
No, but it's a Freddo Easter egg I got given it.
Did you? Who gave you that? And why?
Got it from my work, because they appreciate me.
Do they? It's not what they tell me.
To be honest, I feel a bit ill now. Welcome, everybody, to episode 278 of the... Oh, this chocolate is getting everywhere.
He said with a full mouth, honest.
No, I didn't. No, I was just a bit gummy. I was hungry. I hadn't had any lunch very... Well, I did have some lunch, but it was a horrible vegetarian soup, so I'm stocking up. Yes, episode... Where were we? Episode 278 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page. There is Joe Davis.
Hello. And may I say, Happy New Year.
Oh, yes.
Happy New Year.
Here we are. Happy New Year.
Are you still hungover?
So March 25th was the New Year. Did you stay up till midnight on the 24th?
Of course I didn't. I never do that. It's way past my bedtime.
I don't do it on the other New Year either.
Exactly. Yeah. So listen, I wished all our listeners Happy New Year on Facebook. Mm. And there was just one comment that went, you know, to the effect of, what? Huh? So you may have to explain why it's March 25th.
Well, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay,
it's the traditional
yourself.
New Year.
Yeah, it is.
No, well, it's just the historical New Year. It was always March 25th. Only recently it changed.
And it makes so much sense to do it now.
Yeah, because it's spring, isn't it?
It's
so
spring.
It feels like a new year.
Yeah.
Just feels like we're starting something. Anyway, so we're going to do our... themes next week, is that right?
Well, so long as I've got one, but yes. Yeah, we'll come back to that. Let's not talk about that now.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll do it when we're ready. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
This week, we're going to talk about Easter, because obviously we're recording this during Holy Week. It's Maundy Thursday.
As we speak.
So I've been to several services already. I suppose you have as well. Probably... Couldn't keep you out of the church, I should think.
Nope, not been anywhere near a church.
Fair enough. Anyway, I'll come on to that later. Let's do the church notices, shall we?
Well, firstly, if you're listening on Saturday, Easter Saturday, don't forget to put the clocks forward tonight. Thank you. Also, congratulations to Dr. Dave Steele. How about that? Yeah. He's got his doctorate.
He's purchased one, has he? Because you can buy them online.
Very cheap, you know, on the internet.
They are about $30, I think, $29, something like that.
He'd be so happy you've said that. And speaking of Dave Steele, Dr. Dave Steele, we are doing a Zoom Now event on Thursday the 18th of April for church leaders. And it's really just, you know, giving the opportunity for people who are questioning, how do you move a church forward? If you've opened up to a more progressive, inclusive theology, if you're morphing, if it's changing the way you view the Bible, the way you view human sexuality, the countless other ways that impacts your life, how do you go on that journey sort of while leading a church, or even leading a church through that journey? So if that's something that interests you, then do sign up. That'd be great. I'll put a link on our Facebook page to the Zoom on that day. I think that's
good.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know, we really need to find different names, don't we? I'm just sitting there thinking progressive, inclusive.
Oh,
I mean, inclusive, fair enough.
Yeah.
But progressive.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose it's alternative, isn't it? But anyway.
I don't really like progressive. It's horrible. But, you know, hopefully people knew what I meant.
Yes. No, of course. We love you. And, you know, I want to affirm you, Joe.
Thank you.
Let me do it like this. There you
yes,
go.
Thank you. I feel affirmed suddenly.
Good.
I should say to the listeners, the other big news is that Nick and I are getting together for the weekend next weekend. So expect silliness.
Yeah. We could talk about our themes then.
We could.
There's a thought. Anyway, listen, how are you?
Well, good. Yeah. What can I say? I had a lovely day out with my daughter in London. We saw things. We saw Flaming June.
How is she?
She's lovely. Yeah, she's very well. We went to the theatre. We, you know, it was good. We ate tacos. We had just good, you know, father-daughter time. Went bird watching Sunday. Saw some avocets. You know, like you have a food of the week and you're still eating. You know, we have
food. I shouldn't have bought this Easter egg in. That was a tactical error. Sorry.
Well, I think we should have a bird of the week. And were we to have a bird of the week, obviously the chiff chaff would have been the week before. But the avocet, the lovely avocet. I saw a little group of avocets on a lake. It's beautiful. I just loved them.
They're amazing, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I listened to a really great podcast. In fact, I think I sent you the link. Did I send you the link? The Matthew Syed one. He does one called Sideways. And it was all on cognitive dissonance. And he was talking about, he interviews this sort of psychologist who back in the 70s found himself like very much defending Richard Nixon. And even though more and more evidence was coming in implicating him in Watergate, the more the evidence showed that he was guilty, the more he dug in and defended him. And so he became interested after it did all come out psychologically what was going on there. And it's a fascinating podcast. And I think it's a fascinating podcast for all of us who are told to believe something and we're not sure whether we can or want to or should. So that was very, very interesting. And other than that, just organised a, you know, while you are in the church on Sunday, doing your thing, waving your tambourine, no doubt.
My timbrel.
Waving your timbrel. I'm just doing an Easter walk and, you know, pausing and doing a few Easter-like meditations with some friends who perhaps won't be going to church because they'll be on a walk.
Okay.
If anyone's interested, who's listening, who is in the kind of Worthing area, you're very welcome to come on a little Easter walk with us. We will listen to birdsong and we will chew over what Easter may mean. So there we go.
Good.
That's me. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, actually, but I've had a stressful week.
Have you?
I'll be honest. Yeah. Well, I had to take Bill to the vets on Monday. Aww. Bill is our very elderly dog, as listeners will know. So I was a bit anxious about that, you know, because you never know what they're going to say when you take a dog that old. Yeah. But he's okay. Yeah, he's okay. I mean, I need worming, but, you know, that's different.
He's
fine.
Yeah,
the vet said just, you know, to me, just get down on all fours. I'll give you a check over. He's all right. But yeah, I was a bit worried about that. And he's getting better. He's on some antibiotics, so that's good. But then the exhaust fell off the car, so that was a bit tricky.
Don't you hate that?
Well, there are some people who say that I should drive a car that isn't, you know, nearly 20 years old. But, you know, I don't want to waste it. So that was a bit stressful, having to get all that sorted. And
yeah.
I had to getting it to a place that Claire had to take it and I had to wire it on with the sort of gardening wire to make sure bits didn't fall off.
I've had cars like that.
Yeah, I know.
Now I'm grateful.
It took
to
me
say.
Right back.
Yeah.
It did take me right back to my early cars where everything was held together with string, wasn't it? Really?
Exactly.
And then I preached last night in church and I went, I spoke about the anointing at Bethany.
So can I just check, was anyone else there? I mean, or is this just something you do? You go into a church just walk into the pulpit and preach.
Yeah, I don't go in the pulpit. Never been in a pulpit. Have you ever been in a pulpit? Oh, of course you have. You're a Baptist minister.
Probably one or two pulpits in my time. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever preached in a pulpit.
Haven't you?
No.
Is that a Church of England thing? Do they not let any old...
No, they love pulpits. They love it. I mean, I just can't bear them. It's like spiritual vertigo, isn't it?
Really? I didn't know if you had to be ordained to preach in a pulpit. You know, not everyone can do communion unless you're, you know, priested up.
Well, I think in the Church of England, you're supposed to be licensed to preach, which is a sort of less exciting James Bond. Yeah. The Reverend 007, licensed to preach. So I was speaking on the anointing at Bethany, and I was talking from a book I did many years ago called The Longest Week, which is a history of Jesus' last week. No, but here's the shocking thing, Joe. I looked at it and I wrote it 15 years ago.
Ooh.
15 years ago. I'm too young to have done a book 15 years ago.
I hate to tell you this. You're not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so bad.
So that's that. And then...
food?
Thankful for food. Yes, obviously, thankful for food. Well, there can be only one this week, and it is hot cross buns.
Oh, hot cross bun. Delicious. And do you go for the original, or are you into any of these fancy new ones? Because a Bramley apple hot cross bun, I'm telling you, that's pretty good.
Well, I'm amazed, you know, because let's be honest, hot cross bun technology has come on leaps and bounds in the past few years, hasn't it? They're really making, you know, huge technological advances with the stuff they're putting in it. I do like an original. I'll be honest. I do like an original because, you know, you shouldn't tamper with a classic. But frankly, if it's called a bun, I'll eat it. Yeah. Let's be honest. It doesn't matter.
Well, look, we're gonna move on. But before we get to feedback, can we just do this little feature, things we should have said last week?
Oh, yes.
Again,
yes.
Because... I did miss out quite an important bit of feedback on the whole praise thing.
Mm.
And we were asking people on Facebook about, you know, what their views were. My God, needed so much praise. And Lisa, beloved Lisa Jane, did write in and say, I'd like to take a moment to praise Nick, really, for being totally fabulous. Obviously, I didn't do that last week, but, you know, I just want you to know that Lisa thinks you're fabulous.
Well, I think Lisa is fabulous. So
well,
she
is.
That's mutual.
That is mutual. So do
Thank
I for
you.
That point of matter. Okay, well, let's get on with some feedback. And just a couple I think we're going to do this week. Firstly, from Mim, who says, hi, I have a question. Is it possible to have a mid-faith awakening, or is it always a crisis? What are other people's experiences? We recently had a talk at church about church needing to change, throw away what's religious, focus on loving people, get rid of old foundations. I was quite excited, but others interpreted it differently. So when we were discussing it at group after and people were praying, they were asking for lots of things, salvation related to bring societal change. My silent inner prayer is that each person in the group experiences the second half of life or perplexity or crisis. But I don't want to pray crises for people. That seems a bit mean. So is an awakening to a new kind of faith and love and church possible? That's what's needed for transformation. And that's from Mim. So there's a question, isn't it? Can you have just this like awakening to this expansive, new, wonderful view of God and life and church connected together? Or must there always be a crisis? And it seemed to me that was a very appropriate email to read out this week, because I wonder if Mim is asking, another way of saying that is, can you have a resurrection without death, to be honest?
Well, I think that it's making an assumption that everybody needs to go through a mid-faith crisis.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is really necessarily the case. I think everybody, you know, we want everybody to see God as love, see people reaching more into that and understanding that. But some people naturally do that anyway. They don't really need a crisis. I don't feel that it's a necessary part of the Christian life. I don't know what you think.
Okay. Now you've said that, that does seem right. But I can't help feeling that when you've been taught all your life one way and one view and one thing, and then you sort of hit this thing where you start questioning, I can't really see how that's not a crisis. Interestingly, Rachel's been doing some writing recently, and the working title of which is Waking Up. So she's discussing her absolute journey of waking up, but it certainly did involve a fair amount of crises, I think it's fair to say. So maybe it is possible, Mim.
I mean, I would say that it's possible. I don't think it needs to be a sort of collapse, you know, at all. I think it could be an awakening, a journey, that's fine. Okay. But equally, I would also say that we shouldn't necessarily assume, and I think we do try and say this, that people who haven't been through that spiritual questioning are, you know, less worthy or, you know, whatever. I
less
don't know how you phrase it.
Yeah.
Less progressive. Yeah. Probably, it puts us back to that thing.
Yeah.
It's just that people's journey is different.
Yeah.
So I suppose the thing, Mim, is everybody's journey will be different, really. And, you know, as long as people are, I feel, as long as people are heading towards Christ-likeness, however they find that, then that's a good direction. I don't mind how they're travelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So pray for awakening. That's the answer, Mim. Pray for Roy. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Right. And now from Tim, a mild rebuke, possibly. I quite like it anyway. So, beloved listener, Tim, I must say, says this. Hello, Joe and Nick. I really enjoyed today's episode, referring to last week. It was very thought-provoking. At the risk of being bongoed, I want to challenge Nick's sarcasm around seeing problems as opportunities. I agree with you and Nick. If I'm being told to see every problem as an opportunity for me personally. However, if I live with the knowledge based on experience that in almost all things it is ultimately possible to find some form of gift or opportunity, the way I approach the bongos of life sometimes throws at me can start to change almost or and ultimately are really important words. The gift or opportunity doesn't have to be for me. I had to make someone redundant on Thursday. Where's the gift or opportunity in that? Well, the opportunity was to take the focus off myself and how horrible it was to have to be a part of the process and to focus on being kind, thoughtful and empathetic towards the other person. I wasn't the victim in all this, they were. However, I could have easily wallowed in how hard it was for me. Whilst we were in the thick of my wife's long battle with anxiety and depression, if you had asked me or told me to try and find the gift or opportunity, I would probably have punched you or dissolved into tears. 5 years on, and I can see the gifts and opportunities that resulted from that awful time. For instance, I am now viscerally empathetic with people who live with depression and anxiety and those who live with them. I'm so grateful for that insight. And so he says, I wonder whether death is the one thing that it is rare to be able to find a gift or opportunity in. That's something for me to ponder. Trying to live looking for the gift or opportunity in all things seems to make life more positive and joyful. And that's much love from Tim.
Well, I'd like to say a couple of things here. Firstly, Tim, if you're going to challenge my sarcasm, that is a full-time job, can I just say, because, yeah. You know...
Where does it stop?
Well, I mean, exactly. You know, like, you're setting yourself up for a lifetime's vocation there, my friend.
Okay.
And of course, you're right. You know, he's absolutely right. You know, the way I was using it, it's about timing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, cliches are cliches because they're true, I think.
Yes.
That's largely why they get used. But to just sort of throw them in, and that's the thing, often you're being faced with some horrendous thing, and somebody, management, will go, well, it's an opportunity. And you're going, well, I don't want this opportunity. But of course, everything is an opportunity to learn, to reflect, to move in a more Christ-like direction, as we said earlier.
Yeah, but not nearly as funny.
No. Well, that's the no, you know. It's, but no, I mean, he's right, really, isn't he? But,
yeah.
You know, I think even death, actually, in Christian terms, could be seen as a gift or opportunity, depending on your beliefs.
Doesn't this rather nicely lead us on to the events of Easter week? I mean, trial or opportunity? The whole story is this. This looks
so
bad.
I'm just thinking about, like, you know, Jesus on trial and going, well, don't look at it as a trial. Look at it as an opportunity.
See this as an opportunity, Jesus.
Which he undoubtedly did in a way.
I think he probably did.
Yeah.
So there we are. So that brings us to pull yourself together.
Okay. I'll have some chocolate. You carry on.
Okay. Well, I think this brings us to what we're going to talk about this week, which is, what does Easter mean for us? And I have been asking myself that question, I think, possibly more than ever this year than other. And I'm finding it harder to answer, in fact, in some ways, than I ever have done. So we'll come on to that in a bit. But, you know, I'm well versed in all the things it should mean and ought to mean, but I'm asking myself a different question. I'm asking, what does it really mean for me? Like, not just today but day by day, what does this narrative, you know, the whole narrative of Easter week mean for me? And I've got some answers, but as you would expect, you know, a bit wishy-washy. I'm hoping you're going to be a bit more fundamental in your answering. So let's start with you.
Oh, okay.
What is Easter meaning for you, and what are you reflecting on? And perhaps specifically, you know, what does it mean this year?
Well, I think that the wonder and the mystery of the Christian narratives, the biblical narratives really, are that dwelling with those narratives, they will mean different things at different times. That's their power.
Mm.
So, you know, what I was thinking about this week is that the arc of this week, Holy Week, is so related to our walk of faith, particularly mid-faith crisis walk of faith, it seems to me. And I've been really seeing in it a kind of pattern of our lives, our faith journey, if you like. Mm. You know, for example, it kind of starts with triumphalism. It starts with this triumphal entry into the faith, you know, and you're coming in and everybody is saying Hosanna and welcoming you in, and, you know, everything's great, and it's all celebratory. You start out by challenging loads of stuff, and you want to set the world right, and you want to clear the temple, and you want to stand up to the scribes and the Pharisees, and you want to, you know, do all this, and you're active. You're very active in it all. And then things get more complicated. Mm. Things get more complex, and the questions get harder across the week, and the shadows start to fall, and there's a kind of awareness that this thing that you thought, I mean, I suppose this is from a disciple's point of view, this thing that you thought was so triumphal is going to have some very dark sort of episodes. Sides to it in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you get to this point where you get to this sort of crunch point where everything seems so intense. Mm. You know, there's that intensity of the Last Supper. There's that intensity of that night in Gethsemane. And then and then it all falls apart.
Mm. Yeah.
And everything, and you think you've lost everything. You think that you've, everything's gone. And you get to that blankness of Saturday where there's nothing.
Mm.
And then resurrection and new life and the return of something powerful and something different. And the key thing about resurrection is the shape of, you know, resurrection life looks the same but different. You know, there's those bits where Jesus is recognized and he isn't. He's changed. Yeah. He is the same Jesus for you, but he's different.
Yeah.
And he's with you in a different way, and he's walking with you in a different way. And it seems to me that is the disciples' life. That is our life over and over and over again. That we're constantly going on this journey of discovering that what we thought was triumphal and fixed and wonderful and safe and glorious and was going to give us all the power and everything we needed is actually all about sacrifice and letting go and rediscovering in a new way.
I absolutely love that. That's really, that's so well put, mate. I really do think that's excellent. I really do. Thank you. I agree with you.
Okay. No. I don't know why I've never thought of it this way before. I suppose I have, but maybe I haven't thought as intensely about it. But this just came to me thinking about it last Sunday, actually, Palm Sunday, sitting in church, thinking around it. And
so you're seeing the sort of stages of faith in that Easter week narrative, in effect.
Yeah, indeed. And the Bible is like that. It's like it has these sort of mini stories that echo the major story, that everything's the similar shape. You know, you can see this story of rise, fall and rise again.
Yeah.
So much through the Bible and through the lives of the characters in it. I just felt that I identify with that. And I think the strength of that kind of way of looking at it, using the narrative, is that it takes it away from your questions about historicity or anything like that, in a way, if that's what worries you. As you know, I have quite a strong view of the historicity of the events, but if that worries you, it takes it away from that, because there's still
absolutely
the truth in there of the spiritual journey that you're on.
Is certainly what we do agree. In fact, I was going to say, I learned a new word from a doctor this week. I won't tell you which doctor.
Oh, that's that steel bloke again, isn't it?
Yeah. You must know this. I'm sure you do. I'm probably the only person listening that doesn't know it. But heuristic, H-E-U-R-I-S-T-I-C, heuristic. Mm. And it's a method of, or in this, the context I was talking, it's a method of educating people. So this is, so specifically heuristic is enabling someone to discover by learning something for themselves, by considering it for themselves. It's quite, I think the definition is a hands-on or interactive heuristic approach to learning. So, you know, sometimes in the church, for example, they would say, here's bread and wine. This is the body and blood of Christ. You know, this is his blood. You know, there's a heavy explanation theologically of it. Or you could say, what do you think this bread and wine means?
Mm.
And so, you know, Jesus often used a heuristic technique. You know, some people say this, who do you say I am? He's inviting you to consider it. The parables, of course, would be a great example of this. You know, often not giving a definition, just allowing it to land on people and for them to sit with it. So I think this Easter, going through the Easter story, I felt a liberation, if you like, to allow the divine to say to me, what does this mean to you?
Mm.
What are you going to take from the story this year? And I mean, I suppose I would always say the reason this is still important for me is ultimately because it gives me hope. There's hope. There's disaster in life. There's suffering in life. And all of us who've lived life know that to varying degrees. But always the final word is resurrection, is life, is love, is, you know. So that's what this story means to me. And I think, like you kept saying, we keep going through this journey. And I really relate to that. I'm thinking in my life at the moment, I feel like there's sort of a bit of death energy, but a bit of Good Friday going on. But there equally, there's real resurrection life going on in other parts. And I know that, and I've talked about this before, that from a physical point of view, you know, millions of cells are dying in my body, but I'm alive because millions of cells are being generated. And that's true universally, that stars are exploding and galaxies are colliding and imploding, but new ones are being born and everything. So there's just a pattern of death and resurrection in the whole universe, which I believe the divine indwells all of. And there's a pattern to my life, I think, looking at it, exactly as you've described, of, you know, feeling, joy. I knew this job would be brilliant. It's brilliant. It's the best job I've ever had. I feel so great. I feel so alive. Oh, man, this is really hard. Oh, no. Oh, no. These people are terrible. And, you know, the utter despair. And then, you know, suddenly out of nowhere where you think all hope is lost, there's brand new hope. So, that, you know, employment is one example, but I think it can be true of relationships. I think it can be true of so many things. So I sort of, for me, you know, having faced obviously Brian's death earlier in the year and everything, and that just sort of disorientating me to some extent, I think I'm really focusing on the wonderful, hopeful arc, you know, the last red isn't. And now it's all terrible. And now it's just really tough life. That's all there is. The last red is hope and, you know, celebration. And, you know, death is never the final word. So that's it, really. That's all I got. But I love that you saw the mid-faith journey. I really love that.
Yeah, well, I think the heuristic kind of approach is normal. It's a method of sort of learning in a sort of exploratory way, because you don't actually know the answer. You're not quite sure. So, like, a classic heuristic would be something like trial and error. Is you know, it's a way of finding things out. And so, you know, what you've got there, I suppose, is a heuristic of hope. You know, you're going in there with kind of like, where's the hope in this? I'm just going to look for that element.
Yeah.
We're just going to look for this search. We're going to search for this sort of trace element of hope in it, whatever. And people might take a different approach to Holy Week. They might look at the narrative, as I did, and see where that resonates with their life. They might just use it imaginatively and try and take one character through and see how those are. They might go sensory, and, you know, like you say, with the bread and the wine and the darkness and the, you know, I used to do a thing called longest week live in the end, which was when I would actually map Jerusalem, first century Jerusalem, onto a location, and then people would move from one location to another. Yeah. So that's a kind of heuristic of action. You're actually sort of using that to exploit. Yeah. And what that showed me was, you know, that on that night when Jesus was, you know, betrayed, he went out to Gethsemane, and all he had to do was keep going.
Yeah.
Really, because you were outside the city walls at that point. You're on the Mount of Olives. All you got to do is keep going, and then you're on the road down to Jordan, you're away. But he didn't keep going. He stopped. Mm. And so suddenly, you know, you think of why did he stop? What, you know, what was it? And he stopped because he knew that the purpose of it, whatever, however you conceive, that hadn't been done, that actually the crunch point was still to come. So I think you could take these different approaches, and this is the power of Christian festivals and the power of biblical narratives, that they can speak to us in so many different ways, really.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, like you say, I, you know, if you're going to get hung up on the literalism of the event and all that sort of thing, and you know, if you're being told, well, you must believe, your whole Christian faith depends on a literal understanding of this, you know, that can be quite hampering. I think if you, you know, if you're like me, sometimes you just need time to explore things. I may come back to a literal understanding. I don't know. But it in a sense, it doesn't matter to me anymore, because I think this story is so rich and full of meaning that it doesn't matter. I think this story is saying the life of Jesus is there for us. You know, I think he had to leave in order for his disciples to carry on. And that life that was in Jesus is now in the life of the disciples. That's another angle on it. And I find it really helpful to have this time of year to really ponder that and to think on that. It's supremely hopeful.
Yeah, so I think whatever heuristic you choose to use, whatever your approach is, we'd love to hear from you, I'm sure, in terms of what Easter means to you this year, how you feel, which day you're resonating with, which part of that story is really speaking to you. And I just hope and pray for all of us that this time of year does speak powerfully to us. Particularly, I think, of hope and resurrection, because it seems to me the world really needs that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we should be on a heuristic of ending the podcast now. Yes, I think that's how we should be.
How should we do that?
Well, the usual way is to thank people. And so I would like to thank everybody throughout this year, as we're entering a new year, obviously. I'd like to thank everybody who listens, everybody who supports the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, if you would like to support the podcast, you can do so from our webpage.
Yeah, if you want to give Nick an Easter egg.
Yes, because I finished this one virtually. Look, there's hardly anything left.
That's incredible. Thank you to everyone that does give. And I also want to say to anyone who is in the midst of a Good Friday at the moment, or even that bewildering, you know, Easter Saturday where you just don't know what's going on and what the future looks like, I really do, you know, pray for you some hope and some signs of resurrection life breaking in. And thank you so much for sticking with us.
And thank you to everyone who recommends the podcast. That's a lovely thing as well. I meet a lot of people who say, oh, so-and-so recommended it to me. Maybe that was an act of vengeance. I don't know. But, you know, whatever the case, it was nice of you. So we will be back with you next week with maybe our themes, depending on whether Joe's thought of one.
Well, I've been thinking of little else of recent, but something there.
Oh, and the other thing I'd like to say to people is coming up, you know, we're aware that we get a lot of new people listening all the time, and that's lovely. Welcome on board. I mean, it's always 17. Obviously, however many we get.
Whoever in, you know, the back door is bigger. Yeah,
one in, several out, you know. But we're going to do an episode in the near future on Stages of Faith again, which is really where this podcast started. And we'll sort of try and restate that and take people through that again. Because I thought it'd be useful for us to go back to that now and again, just to remind new listeners of why we do this thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you very much for listening. And Joe, do you want to end with a little prayer, a blessing? You are a reverend still. You might as well do something vicary, I think.
Exactly. Well, this is from Dave Tomlinson's, but you know that I prayed the prayer for a year, the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot, change courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Amen. Well, here is the kind of holy shared version for bad Christians, and it's in the Bad Christians Book of Prayers. And I just think it's great. And especially, it's just words to hang on to, I think, and remind you a bit about what you're here to do. So, here we go. God grant me the serenity to live fully and generously through circumstances I cannot control. Hope to keep on imagining better times for myself and the world, and courage to change what I can instead of simply leaving it to others. Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter.